still remembers fire. Grass remembers rain. Every scar tells a story carved out of pain. If you go digging, son, best mind what you find. The truth.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all, all welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Happy New Year, gang. We made it. 2026. We are in it already. I don't know what that means. Does it mean anything? Does it got to mean anything? I don't reckon it probably does. Always, sort of every year, we're like, wait for this. Oh, end of the year, things are going to change. Then the year comes through, you're like, okay, that was it. All right, cool. I don't know. Feels like something big should happen, but it never does. Well, let me start my timer here. I got an interview a little later. Got to make sure I'm done in time for that. Make sure we are on Do Not Disturb. Do Not Disturbify. Welcome, gang. Hope everybody made it into 2026 and, you know, slid in here just right. Everybody's doing well out there. We're going to do some new stuff today. I'm excited about it. I hope some of you are. I know there's always people who don't like change, and that's okay. But there's going to be some change. So I decided, I'll just wait till we get to that and then I'll intro it. But we're going to do a little story time later on here. My Lord. I decided, so we got about an acre here, give or take. Probably, if I had to, from front to back, if I had to guess, probably got about 13 oaks. One huge, huge oak right on the driveway. Big old oak right in between me and the neighbors on the property line. Fences all around it, all that kind of shit, you know. It's got some other fencing embedded in it that's been there, like, had to have been there 60, 70 years, right? And then probably about 18 pecans still on the property. You know, we've cut some stuff down, and most of what we cut down is trash trees, box elder, bullshit like that, red bud. I like keeping pecan trees. I'm a fan of pecan trees until fall, till winter. And we had kind of a delayed fall. We didn't really get a fall here, which we often don't down here in the swamp. But it was kind of a delayed fall. So we never really got a cold snap that was cold enough to drop the leaves on the pecans until I'd say about 2 weeks before Christmas. Right. We got a cold snap, brap, but I was traveling with the Christmas show. I couldn't do shit about it. Come home one night. Old driveway's covered in leaves. I said, boy, if pecan's done that much damage this year, the oak's going to be a son of a bitch, right? Like, it's going to be one of them years. Like, this oak's about to get me good. But this 750's leaves were still green till a few days after Christmas. It got cold and it snapped that oak and it dropped everything. And I said, boy, I better get out there, take care of this shit. And, you know, here's the tricky thing about losing weight and feeling better and working out and stuff like that, is you forget that you're still getting older, because you feel so much better than you have in a long time that you're just like, I can do it all. Yeah, I'm Jiminy Cricket. Who's got a back problem? Not this guy, right? You start feeling better and you're in less pain and your body's getting stronger. And then all of a sudden you're just like, well, the last 15, 20 years doesn't matter, right? And I'm here to tell you that there's no amount of gym that makes that true. Not that I am aware of. Because holy shit, I said, boy, I'll get out there and knock them leaves out in the morning. Right? This is a couple days. Day before New Year's. New Year's Eve. So boy, I'll just get out there, knock them leaves out. Won't be no thing for a fella like me. Fella's feeling good as I am. So, you know, I told you I'm off right now. I'm off and I'm settling in. We're settling there. So I've been traveling a lot. And me and Rachel know this life, but after I've been traveling a lot and then come home and be home and have to settle in, we have to kind of settle into our rhythm and get back into that. And it usually takes me about 2 weeks to unpack my bag and get used to, okay, I'm living at home again, you know, and I'm not living in a motel. I've lived most of my life in a bag. I'm real good at it. That fight or flight, I stay in that mode, you know. Not good for your body, not good for your mental health, but I've been doing it a long time. I'm good at it. So we're kind of settling our rhythm. I'm finding, you know, getting back to some of the stuff I need to do, you know, cleaning up around the house here. You know, take care of maintenance, stuff like that. I said, boy, I'll go knock him leaves out. Won't be no thing. I'll start me a little a pulled beef in the smoker. And I'll smoke me a little chuck roast. I just recently learned how to do that pulled beef, and I really like it. I've dialed it in where it works pretty good for me every time. And that's all barbecuing and smoking, you know, all that shit really is. It's a bunch of variables, and then you figure out how to control those variables the best way you can. And you get a method that works for you. And then you just do that every time. And it tastes great. That's why when all those guys come in there and try to tell you their method, you're like, that's not my method, though. That's not going to work for me. You have to experiment enough with it till you find out what works for you. Barbecue's a dance. Smoking's a dance. You know? You know, cooking is science, if you think about it. You don't even have to think about it. It just is. Cooking science. It's a bunch of variables trying to achieve an outcome. It's science, right? I suggest probably the most difficult science is baking. My wife's a very good baker, but she's very scientific about it. She also has the old school wing it method that she was taught, but she's also very scientific about it. She's kind of the best of both worlds in that aspect. Anyways, I start that chuck roast. It's going to be a good day. Now, I don't go crazy with my lawn equipment. You know, guys, this push for everything gasoline and big, heavy-duty lawn equipment, it misses me. Just phew. My approach to lawn equipment is this. I buy something cheap. I use the absolute dog piss out of it. And I don't generally take care of it very well. And then I warranty it out. And I do the same thing to the next one. And if it's past warranty, I just buy another cheap piece of shit and use the piss out of it. All right, and I know people go, oh, your tools are important. I hate yard work. I don't care to do it. I don't care about doing it. I enjoy having a little piece of property here to do things on. I shouldn't say I hate it. I don't hate it. I enjoy it. It's hard to find the time to do it. Oftentimes, when I get on the mower and stuff, that's like a little bit of therapy for me. Yeah, just we've talked about this before. Sometimes focusing your mind on some bullshit task will let you unravel some other shit up here in the old snake nest, you know? But that's, I don't spend a bunch of money on lawn equipment. My lawn tractor I basically got for free, fixed it up, got it running. I spent about $280, $300 on this multi-attachment gas-powered weed eater that has a pole saw and a hedge trimmer, and I don't even remember what all the shit it does. About the only part I use is the weed eater. I use the hedge trimmer a little bit. But the pole saw sucks on it. Pole saw, it's just underpowered. It's only a 26cc engine or something like that, 28cc engine. And the pole saw is just underpowered as shit. And I've used a piss. It was a Badger. I've used the shit out of it. Still runs good. I run clean fuel in that two-stroke, though. I run premix fuel. Everybody's like, don't do that. It ruins your engine. No, it doesn't. It's kept that little engine running like a top. Simple. You know? That's what I like. My lawn stuff. I still like a lot of hand tools. I accomplish so much more with a broom than I do with any other tool. You know what I mean? I got a good shop broom. Cause that I like my shop broom to be a decent stiff brush broom. I remember first time I was sweeping, that was my dad's thing, you know, sweep all the grass up in the driveway after you mow the yard and edge and all that bullshit. And I was out there half-ass pushing this broom around one time. I was probably about 11 or 12, maybe it was 13. My friends are riding their bikes up and down the street. Like, that's the biggest torture. You're doing yard work for your dad, and your friends are riding their bikes up and down the street, hooting and hollering, having a great time. It looks like they're having the most fun time that's ever been had. The most fun time. And you're over there with a broom and a driveway full of wet St. Augustine grass clippings. And a dad who's already in a bad mood in the garage about a car he's working on. And I was sulking a little bit. I was out there half-ass pushing that broom around the driveway. Oh, man, I must have caught his attention. Damn, boy, you don't even know how to sweep. Well, I'm your kid. If that's something you want me to know how to do, it's probably something you should have taught me by now. Damn, boy, you don't even know how to sweep. Come out there, and he grabbed the broom out of my hands. He goes, I might teach you how to do this just like somebody had to teach me. Well, that's how parenting works, old man. But, yeah. But then he proceeds to teach me how to push a broom while all my friends are riding up and down the street, and I'm going to hear them. I just assume they're laughing at me because I'm getting taught how to sweep while they're having a good time. But I digress. As a result of that, I'm a very good broomer, very good sweeper, very tremendous sweeper, the best sweeper. Yeah, very good. I get more done with the broom than most other yard tools. The broom and a little yard rake. Woo, son. That's where I shine. But I bought, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, just a little blower to have around the house. Blow stuff off, blow the driveway off, that kind of shit. And it's just a little Black & Decker electric blower. Just cheap. I think I might have spent $50 on it. I had this big old bag with it, this other attachment, and I never screwed with that other attachment or figured out. I knew it was supposedly some kind of vacuum or some shit like that, and it sucked stuff up into that bag. And I thought, that's stupid. Who needs a vacuum that big? Right. I'm never going to use that. So I hung that crap up in the rafters when we moved in here. And those attachments, I never thought about them again in life. I started tackling. And usually, we've had to do so much work on this property, like cutting the jungle back and getting it back to normal over the last 3 or 4 years. It's been a long stage process. There's still projects happening and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of times I hire my little buddy Chicken to come over and help me. Chicken's a good hand. I pay him $100 and he'll work a day for me and he helped me get a bunch of stuff done. So a lot of times if I'm working on the cars, whatever, I'd have him do the leaves, that kind of shit. Clean the gutters out. Chicken's like a little spider. He'd climb right up that roof and stay on that roof all day. Don't bother him. I don't get on roofs no more. But boy, I said, man, I'll just knock him leaves out. Lord have mercy. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I got out there that start the little blower. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll start at the end of the driveway out there at the road, and I'll blow this little detritus up. Then I'll move the cars back on the other side of the pile, and then I'll blow it in it. So like right in front of the garage, there's a big old two-car spot on the pavement behind the house. I'll blow it up in there, scoop it all up, bag his shit, be done with it, you know? I was not prepared for the pile I had by the time I got even halfway down the driveway. The blower was that little Black & Decker blower was working its balls off trying to move this ridiculous pile of leaves. And it was, you can't really sweep through that part because there's too big. So one side of the driveway is like a bed. It's got a bunch of shrubs and shit in it. And then the other side of the driveway is like maybe a 2 foot wide piece of strip of land against chain link fence. But there's little trees and bullshit and monkey grass all in there. So you can't sweep it. You know, you got to blow it. It's, you know, you can yard rake it, but you're going to be tangled up in crap the whole time. So I'm blowing this crap up and I'm getting this pile out. I realize, man, at some point I'm going to have to stop and flatten the pile out. Cars ain't even going to be able to get over this pile of leaves. You know what I mean? I'm just going to push it all back down the driveway. So I start scooping it up and bagging it. And my back starts hollering at me about bending over and shoveling and all this kind of shit. I said, boy, it's going to take forever. I come walking back off of this garage and I seen that vacuum attachment. I said, boy, I ain't never tried that out. I'll give it a shot. So I hooked it all up and kind of figured out how it all went together. I think it's kind of badass, man. You just, and it gets clogged up. You have to stick your hand in there and knock the clog loose because we got a bunch of little sticks and shit like that. But the fan blade that creates the blower, the little turbine blade in there, is made out of something that's pretty tough shit. So when it works as a vacuum, it just sucks stuff up through there and then it chops all that shit up. Chops it up with the leaves and the little twigs and into this very fine mix of compost, basically. I fill that little bag up one good time, and here in Houston, this is such a racket. If you wanted to pick your leaves up, you have to put them in these special bags that you had to buy at the grocery store, and they're Houston leaf bags. And it's 10 of them for $12. You tell me who's making money on that shit, right? 10 of these bullshit bags for $12. But that's the only way you can get the city of Houston to pick up your leaves. It's the worst racket I've ever seen in my life. It's such a scam. I got my $12 bags out there. I fill one of them bags up with that shit. It's almost too heavy for that bag when it's all chopped up all fine like that. You fill that bag up, it's pretty heavy bags. I tote that some 50 out to the front, put it in the... We have a big ditch on the front of the property. And then in between the road and the ditch, there's a little strip of land. That's where you put stuff for the city to pick up. So mine's all eroded, right? It's all washed out. The city come in there to do some work on the road and wash the ditch out, and they've never come back and fixed it despite my repeated emphatic phone calls, letters, and such. So that shit's all washed out there. So it's just a small spot we have to put stuff. So I got to pile these bags up. So get that first bag out there. I was like, boy, that's pretty damn heavy. That's... And I look back at it. It just barely made a dent in that pile. Barely made a dent in that pile. So I do two more bags, bag it all up, get the cars moved, pull that crap all up in the driveway where I can use my broom and my rake and really get after it and get it piled up and start sucking it up and get it all back. It's all 10 bags full, just chock full, right? Piled out there at the road. I started this project at like 10 o'clock in the morning. It's like 5 o'clock now. I thought I was going to knock this out in like 2 hours and go do a bunch. I was going to film some stuff, do all kind of other shit, get ready for New Year's Eve. We're going to have this little shindig. My sister's here in town visiting. We're going to have us a little shindig here at the house. And the time I got done with that shit, I was so wore out. I didn't want to do nothing. I ain't worked that hard on nothing in a long time. I'm ready to go back on the road. That's what I'm saying. Now, it was, it kicked my ass, man. I was, boy, I spent New Year's Day limping. My hip was going, man, you jackass. What were you thinking? We ain't ready for this yet. My hip hollered at me all day, New Year's Day. I brought in the New Year's, I tied one on pretty good New Year's Eve, boy. I got into my whiskey a little bit New Year's Eve, up listening to music, raising hell on the porch, watching. You go in our backyard because we're so close to, when we're in Houston proper, you can go in our backyard and there's a rolling alloy building behind my house about, I'd say like 400 yards or something like that. But you can look to the right of that rolling alloy building, you can see the downtown skyline. Well, that's where there's a big park, Eleanor Tinsley Park, down there on Buffalo Bay. It's where they do the fireworks, big Houston fireworks show. So you stay in our backyard, watch the fireworks show. It's kind of fantastic. And of course, all our neighbors around here were blowing fireworks off. It was wild. I have a theory you can always tell how good the economy is by how long the fireworks go on Christmas, New Year's, and July 4th. And you can tell the economy is a little jacked this year because the fireworks all ended pretty early around my place. Houston might be struggling this year because usually if my neighbors got a little money in their pocket, they go crazy on them fireworks, but it was not. And we get a lot of gunfire. We live in a pretty large Latino neighborhood, and I don't know what tradition it is, but something about Christmas Eve makes them want to shoot guns, and I don't know what the deal is, but they get out there on Christmas Eve and pop guns off and fireworks, and of course do the same thing on New Year's. I got out there, I got tied up pretty good, listen to music, watch fireworks, hanging out with mama. Happy to be home, that sort of thing. But them leaves kicked my ass. I got 10 full bags out there. I probably need about 2 more bags to get all the rest of it in the yard. But I think what I'm going to do is put my mulching bags on my mower and run that shit over and suck that up and bag it and just dump it somewhere along the back fence. I got a couple places where I can dump things around here. So I got a sycamore tree. It's like growing up out of an old sycamore stump that was cut off by a moron. And it left a big old gaping hole in the ground. Then the new sycamore tree grew out of it. And so I've been filling that up. I've been taking my compost and filling that up. And it turns to dirt quick, you know, around here. It's swampy. So everything decomposes pretty quickly. I got a couple stumps I'm trying to keep covered because I've salted them. And I'm hoping those stumps will soften up enough that I can pull them out. James is going to let me borrow his tractor. I'm going to try to pull them stumps out behind the shop. Because we're getting ready to bring the Volkswagen here, mama's car here. So I've cleared that area out. I need to pull them stumps up. So I got a spot back there to stick that car for a minute. Well, I figure out what the next step is, what I'm going to do for a chassis, what I'm going to do with that car. Need to get it here in my possession. That's probably going to be a long and lengthy task. It might be the last car I screw with. We'll see. I say that. I worked on the Cadillac yesterday. Today marks 6 years of owning that Cadillac. And I feel like I should celebrate by burning it with the leaves. Not going to. Still need the car. But the Mazda's, but I got new parts coming for the Mazda. So I'm about to tear in the Mazda, figure out what's going on with it. And buying a little pickup for my buddy David. So sure I'll be jacking with that some too. We thought it might be good content. We're going to do it. So that truck he's got, it's got 180,000 miles on. It's got a, what is that, 4L60, I can't remember which one it has. I can't remember all those acronyms. I know what transmission has. I just can't remember all those damn acronyms. This little 5.3 Chevrolet Avalanche, like 06. Right before AFM. Doesn't have AFM, DOD, any of that bullshit on it. But I got to take it. With that 4L60 having 180,000 miles on it, you know, puts it in a precarious position. But it's like my buddy David, y'all know David, transmission builder. He always says, if you rebuild them before they break, they last longer. You know, you rebuild them before cases get warped and valve bodies get trashed, they last a little longer. So we went ahead, we're going to buy all the parts and we're going to rebuild that 4L6 together. I'm going to video the whole thing. Basically my first time rebuilding a transmission, a 4L60. Transmission, and I'm building the unit that's going to go in my truck. I think it makes some good content. I think David making fun of me screwing it up half the time will be pretty hilarious. We'll see. Anyways, that was a long, convoluted story to tell y'all that I cleaned up all the leaves around my property, and it whipped my old ass. I was all excited about spending this January doing domestic shit, and now I'm like, I forgot domestic shit hurts. At the end of it though, there was good pulled beef chuck roast that just turned out phenomenal, so I was real happy about that. I'm in a better place starting this year than I've been in a few years. New Year's used to bring some kind of dread with it, and I talked to y'all a little bit about that, about how I don't really do resolutions. I do, now I just try to take stock of the year. And last year was a good year. Did a lot. I figured out I wrote 760,000 words last year, and I'm going to up that this year. My wife made a post. It was a line from Hamilton talking about how he's writing like he's running out of time, but I think writers and creatives can understand what I'm talking about when I say sometimes you hit these waves and you just got to ride that wave because you know that wave's going to end. And right now I'm on a wave of creativity, and I know it's going to end at some point. I'm going to hit a dead end and I'm going to have to fumble around until I find the next wave. Right? That's just how they work. But these days I try to get everything I can do out of that wave as I'm doing it. And so I started this year feeling good. I had some sketch ideas, some things I wanted to write. I had this new story series I wanted to do with you guys, and I wanted to share it with y'all first before anybody else gets to see it. Because it's a whole thing. But I was thinking about how this year I walked into the new year not mad at anybody. And it's been a long time since that happened. I carry petty grievances around. I'm real bad about it. I always have been. I'm trying to get better as I get older. You know, I always tell you, I'm not preaching at you. I'm trying to tell myself this shit. I'm trying to teach myself to be this person. That's what all this is about. I started thinking, I read something funny. There's a guy I follow on social media, on Facebook, named Thomas Bendon. He's here in Houston too. Bendon with Bendon. He works on semi trucks, semi tractors and trailers, and he straightens them and every stuff. We call him the semi truck chiropractor. He uses these bending machines, and it's just fascinating to me. I'm always fascinated by somebody that's at the top of their craft, somebody that just knows what the hell they're doing and they're real good at it. And so I follow his page a lot, and he's been a content creator here for a couple of years, done pretty well for himself, and some of his stuff's pretty funny. I get a kick out of the dude. But he posted, and I don't know if he wrote it or he read it or he heard it somewhere, but the other day he posted something. It was like right around New Year's. He had this post, and it said, "Never seek revenge. Rotten fruit will follow on its own." And boy, it just resonated with me, and it bounced around in my head, and I kept thinking about all the little petty things I'd held on to in my life that I decided I was going to get somebody back for. And, you know, y'all have heard about some of them, like things like that. And I just thought it was really brilliant, because the times that I did participate in trying to get back over on somebody, it just escalates things. And once there's an escalation, then there's a return escalation. And I don't know, y'all know about the Hill, the Hatfields and McCoys. There's just constant escalations until it reaches a climax. And the climax is usually bloody. Somebody ends up hurt. Things get out of hand. And you wonder how much that you want to contribute to that. Like, the older I get, the less I want that climax. I saw this dude the other day on TikTok, and he said, "I don't want to F around and find out." Find out what? That I'm old? Let's let some things remain a mystery. He said, "I'm at the age where I don't wish a MF or would." And I am at that age. I don't want to fight no more. I don't want to fight. I don't want to hurt. I don't want to do none. I don't want the negative emotions that carry with it. It don't mean I still ain't got a little hillbilly in me that likes to more. You know what I mean? To get riled up. But boy, I sure am not interested in that anymore. If I got another fight, my whole body probably end up looking like Jake Paul's jaw. You know? And I don't want to do that. God, how satisfying was that? I don't care if it's scripted. I don't care if it's real. You can come in comments, tell me it wasn't real and all this stuff. I don't care. I enjoyed watching that kid get his jaw broke, and I shouldn't have, but I did. I've watched that clip. I don't know how many times I've watched that clip and just giggled gleefully. And then I go watch the Tate jackass get beat down, and that one makes me smile too. It's nice to see a little comeuppance. But I kept thinking about that quote, "Never seek revenge, rotten fruit will fall on its own." And it's just so damn, you know, cliches are cliches for a reason. It's because generally it's because they're true. Or they've repeated so many times that they've become true. And I wish that's one of those lessons I wish I had figured out earlier on. I used to get real, real wrapped up in getting back at people, you know. There was a kid that bullied me unmercifully as a young person back home in Kilgore in Sexton Road. And there was a boy who was a couple years older than me that bullied me unmercifully. I told y'all a story about him one time and how I wrote this fictional story about him. And I always had this dream, like one of these summers, when I was going back for the summers and I was getting a little bigger, and I was like, "Boy, one of these summers, I'm going to catch him and I'm going to put it on him. I'm going to put it on him," you know? And I never did. And his life went on to be hell. Literal hell. I think things are a little better for him these days, but for a period of life, his life was just literal hell without me doing nothing. I should have learned it then. Should have figured that out then, but I did not. You can waste a lot of energy being mad and trying to you know, about what you're going to do to get somebody back. And when I think about all that wasted energy in my life, there's a period of time, I've told y'all a little bit about it, though, but when the Laugh Stop closed, when Jeff McFerrin closed the Laugh Stop and sold off the rights to it and everything, me and Rachel had money tied up in that. We lost money on it. And I hated Jeff. Jeff done all that shit when I was out of the country. He knew I was out of the country, and I couldn't help Rachel. I couldn't be a part of it because I was stuck overseas doing shows for troops and stuff in Iraq. And I'm come home just furious. Just hated this dude. I started working out because of this dude, because I wanted to catch him in a dark alley and snatch him up and just beat the piss out of him. I just wanted to hurt him. I was so ferociously angry at this man. I don't know what's become of his life. I didn't bother to look him up. But I spent several years early on in me and Rachel's marriage just furiously angry at this man who didn't give me another thought in the world. Took my money and went on with his life. And what could have possibly come of it? Let's say, in some fantasy scenario, I just happen to be in the right place, right time, and catch old Jeff. And I yank him off in the alley and I whoop the fire out of him. Right? He's a rich dude, lots of lawyers. My career's over. My life's over. I'm going to prison. Right? Will it be worth it? Time away from my kids and everything, because I got back over on this dude. We still won't have our money. Right? But I wasted years being furious with this dude. Just years being beyond angry. Just literally just wanting to hurt him, you know. And that shit, I think it taxes your soul a little bit to feel that way about somebody. You know, I don't know. I'm no great philosopher, but I think that your soul pays a tax for that kind of anger. I think your body pays a tax for that kind of anger. That energy is not good for you. You know, I'm not one of these like new age people be like, that's what causes cancer. You know, I think carcinogens cause cancer, but I don't think that negative energy, that anger and everything, I think it's taxing for your soul. They talk about, I was listening to a sleep doctor, this guy talk about sleep, and he's talking about how people who think they're night owls, he says, it's just your circadian rhythm's off, and it's your cortisol levels. It's your body's in fight or flight mode. Your body is afraid to go to sleep because it doesn't feel safe. And then he was talking about all kinds of different sleep disruptions. And he's talking about how these cortisol levels affect you and how your body can stay. Remember, I just told y'all, when I come back from being on the road, it takes me a week or two to unpack my suitcase because I spent so much time living in a bag that I get into that mode that I'm just going to live out of this bag and forget all my other things. I'm just going to live out of this bag. That's probably some type of fight or flight response. It's some kind of high alert response that my body goes into. And I think we all do that, right? We all have that for different things. Things that stem us up a little bit and get us tweaked. I've told y'all the story about Paul, the man that was my business partner up in Montgomery County. And he got busted. They raided him. He lied to me about what they raided him about. He said it was taxes, and it turned out to be this dude had all this child pornography and stuff. And it turned out to be a huge deal, and it ruined the company I was buying from him. It ruined the company name. And the company started going downhill, and the guy started threatening me. He started calling me, so I had a deal with him where I was paying him every month on this company. But then the calls stopped coming in. We weren't getting business, and I was having to go out and find all my own business. And this dude would call me, and boy, if I was out there doing this, by God, I'd already have 50 grand in the bank. I don't know how you don't have no money. I was like, I'm putting most of my money in your pocket. That's why I ain't got no money. Me and my family were going without. So I was trying to make good on this deal. And it got to the point, he called me up one day and he threatened me. Said that I was holding out on him and I was stealing money from him, and he was an old Vietnam veteran, one of those types. And I think he's full of shit, to be honest with you. I've never looked up his war record, but he tried to tell me. He's one of these guys, oh, he was special forces, he was all this bullshit. And generally, here's what I've noticed. I'm not saying every one of those guys is full of shit, but when somebody tells you all that stuff, 9 out of 10 times, they turn out none of it's real. My Uncle Gary was underwater demolition team, UDT, which later on became the Navy SEALs in Vietnam. My Uncle Gary didn't talk much about his experiences. He certainly didn't tell strangers what a bad dude he was. He was just very, that was a part of his life that was over. I don't think guys that really live that life, really do that thing, spend a lot of time talking about it. Now I kind of look foolish when I say that, because every Navy SEAL involved in Osama's capture has written a book. But I think them old school guys, they didn't really talk about it. But Paul was always telling these stories about how he would sneak up in the night and cut a guy's neck and all that stuff. But I'm not going to lie, it scared me a little bit. It seemed like an unhinged dude. And these are stories I heard after we got deeper in our partnership, our business partnership. And he'd tell me his bullshit. And sometimes I'd blow it off. But when he got crazy and started threatening me, it started making me worried. I was exposed. You know, he knew where I lived. He knew my family. He knew I had young children. It's an unhinged man. So he calls me up on a Saturday and threatens me, you know, all this shit he's going to do to me. And I said, you know what? I said, you know, so we had a contract. He never would sign the contract and get the contract all finished up. He had all these health problems. It's a long story. I said, you never signed a contract. And if you don't feel like I'm holding up my end of the deal, I'm doing the best I can, but you've ruined the company name and we're not getting the calls anymore that would have made this company money. And I'm having to do everything on my own. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you all your equipment back, and I'm going to send you this last little bit of your money, and don't ever contact me again. You can go back to running your business and you can finish screwing it up on your own. I documented everything. But it wasn't good enough. So he didn't get what he wanted. What he wanted was to be in control of me and keep gaslighting me. That's what he wanted. And he'd been doing a pretty good job. I had fallen for it, because my eyes were on that money. That money will talk you into shit. That money will talk you into shit. Well, once he didn't have control of me anymore, he got real threatening. And I've literally got pages and pages and pages of threats this man put in print. And, you know, I'm not a go-to-the-police kind of guy. It's not my type of shit. But I wanted it all just in case something ever happened. And I started carrying, I'm not a big everyday carry guy. I don't carry guns anymore. I used to carry one when I was younger. And then I quit for a little while, really while I was under Mr. Bob's mentorship. Because Mr. Bob had traveled the world and had managed to get himself out of every situation without ever needing a gun. And he had some strong opinions about that. And he said, more people learn to deal with their situation. It struck a nerve with me. And I got to realize, you know, I'm capable enough to handle most of my situations. You know, there's some things you can't, you get in a situation where somebody's trying to shoot a bunch of people. I get the argument for that. I'm not against guns. I own plenty. I just don't carry them every day anymore. But during that shit, when that old man was threatening me, one night he told me he was going to sit outside my house with a rifle, with a .30-06, and catch me coming out the door, let my wife find me in the driveway. I mean, he said some shit to me. I ain't going to lie, y'all. I started studying on killing this man. I did. I studied on it quite a bit. I put a lot of thought into it. Because I started to think that's the only way I was going to have any peace, was get back over on this dude. One more escalation. He was having he had these two grandsons. He was having them call and threaten me and stuff. And they were tied up in all kind of nefarious shit. And it was just getting to be constant. And also, I'm trying to start my business over from scratch, but I'm also dealing with this guy stalking me and saying all this crazy shit to me. And it's Montgomery County. It's good old boy territory. Nobody cares about your problems. People are like, oh, y'all just need to settle that shit. You know, that kind of stuff. But I ain't gonna lie, it scared me enough that I started studying on ending that man. I started studying on how to do it and get away with it. And I put hours and hours of thought into that, and hours and hours of stress, nervousness, anxiety, trying to figure out what to do about this man. Instead of just going on living my life and letting time do what it was going to do to him. He was 79 years old at the time. That's been 7 or 8 years ago now. But boy, I put a lot of thought into how I was going to get this man, how I was going to get him, and I was just going to put an end to him. I had steeled myself that was the only way to deal with that solution, with that situation. And I think your soul pays a tax for those kind of thoughts. I honestly do. It got me in a real dark place. I started driving around with a little pistol in my pocket. I started driving around with ideas. I was looking over my shoulder for this guy all the time. And I should have recognized that they were just the empty threats of a desperate man who was losing control. I should have been smart enough. I should have had the wisdom. But when you're a father and you got young kids, and I was also recovering from that roof fall and trying to get my body back together, and I was scared, and I started acting in a fear-based set of protocols, if you will. And I never done anything to the man. I just studied on it a lot, wasted a lot of energy on it. And eventually time come around and got his ass. And we'll wrap that up for right now, because we'll come back to it in the closing sermon and spend a little more time on it. But I was just thinking, I wanted to share that with y'all. I feel like old Baptist preacher. It was on my heart to share this quote I read with y'all. It was on my heart to talk about it this morning. It is Sunday morning here in the wrecking yard. So this new thing I'm doing, I'm real excited about it. I hope you guys enjoy it. It's going to be about 10 minutes every week. So if you don't want to hear it, there'll just be 10 minutes of the podcast you can turn down and go do something else with your life. But I hope you guys enjoy this. I was always fascinated with Faulkner's fictional county and Prairie Home Companion in these fictional settings, because it gives you some freedom to write outside of parameters and not hurt people that maybe you know by telling stories about them or anything, even if the stories aren't about them. And I've been doing a bunch of research about Levers Chapel, that little community I grew up with, I grew up in, because the whole time I was growing up, when I was growing up there, I was told that Native Americans live on that land, that creek. There's a creek through there called Caney Creek, and there's another one called, I'm going to screw up the pronunciation, Teachia Creek, something like that. It's a Native American name. But all in that area, there was a famous Cherokee chieftain, Diwali Bowles. And he had signed a deal with Sam Houston after helping the Texans. And Sam Houston said that the Cherokee could come, this is after the Trail Cheers, said that the Cherokee could come into East Texas to set up some settlements. So all along this creek, Caney Creek, there was Caddo Indians. There was a Caddo Indian tribe that lived all up and down that creek. And they were friendly with this Chief Bowles and his people, and they come in there and they set up a community there as well. And it was all Cherokee traders and settlers living in this area. So I started, so what I did is I've created, and I've been writing these for a little bit and putting some of these together, and I created my own little fictional place, and it's called Diwali Bottoms, Texas. And it's right alongside them creeks, not too far from Sexton Road, where I grew up in Lever's Chapel. And I'm just going to start every week. I'm going to read you a little story from Diwali Bottoms, Texas. And I'm really excited to read you this first one. Nothing fancy. I printed it out. Look at me. A blanket of aluminum cooked moisture fought his first flutterings, the brain rebooting, his body trying to catch up. Why is it so damn hot? He peeled her arm off his chest. Her light snores continued in cadence regardless of the interruption. The window unit was silent. His hushed curse pushed through the stillness. He had traded a pretty clean Honda 50 to his cousin Ronnie for the old unit from one of the county trailers. Damn thing cooled the place pretty good when it wasn't popping a breaker. He pulled a pair of faded basketball shorts on before padding quietly down the hallway, trailing his fingers on the wood paneling in the dark. Waking up the kid would just make everyone miserable. So quietly, he slowly twisted the handle of the door and stepped down onto a makeshift set of cinder block steps, his feet sticking to the light moisture pooling on them. Tendrils of humidity-soaked St. Augustine clung to his ankles while he made his way to the driver's side door of his pickup. He reached through the open vent window and fumbled for a soft pack of Winstons. He was happy to see the pale blue Bic lighter stuck in the plastic sleeve. The first puff made him cough and tear just a little as he tossed the pack back through the triangular opening. The nicotine stimulation straightened his walk as he rounded the end of the mobile home. He had signed a promissory note over an ARP when he bought the trailer. It was a 1975 model. His cousin Jason had made him a good deal moving it out to the cut for him. 7 years in cotton down at the Eastham unit had given him plenty of time to plan for his freedom, but none of the necessary skills for execution. The place still wasn't completely level. If you dropped anything that would roll in the kitchen, it ended up against the ever-present pile of clothes on the laundry room floor. The trailer tongue, still installed and overgrown with weeds, mocked his effort silently as he stepped down in the drainage swale to get around it. The saturated red clay felt cool on his feet as he walked towards the breaker box on the back side of the home. Shit. The curse was noncommittal, more habitual than anything. His kid brother Stevie had come by a few days back and tried to help him install an extra circuit for the AC unit. But like most of their projects, this had fizzled into drinking beer around the trash fire and planning completion the next time they got a free minute. All the covers on the panel were still lying in the mud, and the access door hung open. Maybe moisture had caused it to flip the breaker, being so exposed. Hell, he didn't know how any of that shit worked. Stevie had been an electrician's helper at the toilet bowl plant in Kilgore for a few months and had a tenuous grasp on the basics, but mostly he just wanted to impress his big brother, but he had greatly overestimated his skill set. Peering forward into the tangled nest of wires surrounding the breakers, he drew deep on the Winston, half hoping that nicotine charge might unlock some hidden knowledge he'd forgotten he'd once possessed. The uneven surface of the worn Louisville Slugger whistled just barely above a whisper in the night as it finished its arc towards the back of his head. His daddy always said he was the hard-headedest son of a bitch he'd ever met. Must have been true, because the blow from the bat didn't knock him out. Lurching forward with the still-lit Winston ejecting from his mouth, he threw his hands right into the tangled, exposed wiring. Everything got bright and hot, then dark. The formerly occupied body slumped against the aluminum trailer before collapsing into the mud. The assailant's footsteps could be heard retreating into the creek bottom, legs swishing through the wet bayou grass. Tiffany woke at the loud pop. She slid her feet into her TGNY rubber sandals while still adjusting eyes, searched the room for Tony. She cussed him under her breath as she made her way down the hot hallway, pausing only to peek out the big window at his pickup in the driveway. But at least he made it home. Her suspicions narrowed for the minute. "Mommy, I'm hot." Shit. He'd woke her daughter up too. The curly-topped 5-year-old reached for her hand as she stumbled into the dark living room. "It's okay, baby. Tony must be out there trying to fix the power. Let's go check on him." Silently hoping she was right and he wasn't just passed out drunk by the burn barrel. The clock with the hand-painted deer on it by the front door read nearly 5 a.m. when she scooped Amber up to make her way down the concrete steps to the yard. She cussed Tony in her head again as she slipped in the wet clay around the monstrous metal tongue of the trailer. Her mind couldn't make sense of him lying in the mud until her eyes adjusted enough to see his ruined face. She fell backwards as she tried to escape something no amount of chemicals would ever help her forget, shrieking and shaking uncontrollably. Carl tapped on his clipboard while the coroner prattled on about an album he had no interest in listening to. He'd never wanted to be a cop. He worked as a jailer for the county while he finished up the basic courses he could afford at Kilgore College. Carl wanted to be a draftsman, maybe even an engineer making the big bucks. He'd gotten Sharice pregnant before he was finished with schooling, and his boss at the jail got him hired on as a deputy. Sharice had a decent gig with the county clerk. Soon as the kid was a little older and things calmed down, finishing that mechanical engineering degree would be top priority in the Haynes household. He had tried to talk to Tiffany. She was an incoherent mess. The only thing he was sure about was she didn't have a clue what had happened. He had one of the other deputies give her and the kid a ride to her mama's house. Their neighbor, Billy, had found her hollering behind the house with Tony's cooked shell while the kid stumbled around bawling and called the police. Wasn't the first time Billy had called the police about Tony, but was the first time he hadn't been bitching about him. "Did you hear me, Carl?" shook him from his momentary escape. The coroner, Virgil, was red-faced and breathing hard. "Somebody hit him in the back of the head with something heavy. Whopped him a good one. I can't imagine they wasn't trying to kill him." Carl leaned back against his cruiser, one finger rubbing his temples. With a mocking tone, he looked down at the dew glimmering on his boot in the morning light. Who'd want to kill Tony Ware? "Well, half the county would probably string the whole family up, especially that shit-ass brother of his." Virgil spat the words out with the venom of a bullied classmate. "I was joking, Burge." Carl adjusted his hat and straightened up. Tony and him had been in the same grade from kindergarten to high school. They'd both worn moccasin jerseys back when Diwali High had a decent team. Carl probably couldn't name 3 people who hadn't wanted to crack Tony's skull open at some point, himself included. "Yeah, I'm gonna take a walk out back and see what I can see. Holler at me when the report's ready." Carl patted Virgil on the shoulder as he headed towards the back of the trailer. "For sure, just give me a few days, Carl. I'm still working on the report for the Swinney kid, too. I'll get them both over to you." Virgil was already climbing into his pickup. The Chevrolet V8 whined a little bit before catching and firing up. Carl gave a brief wave as Virgil pulled on the gravel road headed towards town, bits of sedentary rock bouncing from tire to fender in its own particular rhythm. Virgil's registration sticker had expired nearly a year ago in August of 86. Carl couldn't help but smile at the juxtaposition of Virgil's detail-oriented occupation in contrast with his being. Tune in next week for more from Diwali Bottoms, Texas. Episode one down. Anyways, hope you guys enjoy that. We're going to be doing more of that. Look forward to telling y'all more about Diwali Bottoms, Texas. All right. Let's do some testimonials, right? I think that's what needs to happen next. And I got that all ready to go. Testimonials, if you will. Last week was Christmas. I was talking about the Christmas show. Oh, here we go. Oh, our old buddy David Beckham. I'm just getting time to watch this week. I wanted to thank you for my lovely bride, Michelle. Oh, I sent him he had me do a cameo from it. Michelle's, I told y'all a couple weeks ago, she broke her femur. And David's one of our day wonders. And, you know, a femur break is a hard thing to go through. We watched it with my daughter and two granddaughters, four women sniffling and eyes watering. I've never seen a group allergy happen so fast at one time. That meant a bunch to all of us. Thanks again. We love you, man. Hey, I love you guys too. And I really hope Michelle's feeling better, or at least there's some improvement. I really feel for her going through that right now. Just a terrible time of year to go through it. Crown Calf Show, oh, Ireland. Hey, Jerry Wayne, a good method for getting rid of those pecans would be to trim them before the first set of branches. You can inject or paint on the stump this stuff called glyphosate, but wear gloves and goggles and try not to spill any on the ground or anything you want growing. It's gnarly stuff. If you need a guide to Dublin, let me know too. I'll gladly take a few days off to show you around. I'm probably gonna call you on that one. For sure. Yeah, so with that little area up there, that's what I've decided. I'm actually tackling that tomorrow. That's my thing. I got my... I tried to sharpen my chainsaw blade. I don't know if I made it worse or better, but I do have a backup blade in case I made it worse. But I got my little chainsaws ready to go, and I got another little smaller portable handheld one. And I'm just going to get down, since everything's dead in there, well, not dead, but dormant for winter right now, and I can see better in there through the roses and everything. I'm just going to get in there, and I'm going to cut everything ground level that's not a rose. And then some of y'all were telling me about the copper nails. I spent some time reading about that, and that seems like a good way to go. I did get some other stuff, Toronado or something, that I'm going to dab on the stumps of the bigger ones. But it looks like that's a pretty old method. It looks like I can drive a few copper nails each one of those little stumps. And they're not going to be big. They're only going to be about 3 or 4 inches in diameter, these little stumps. So I'm going to get over there, cut them at ground level, drive copper nails into all the stumps of any size. I'm going to try to pull the ones that are small enough I can pull. And then I'm going to fish those trees out of there through the top, the cutoffs, and try to untangle all those roses and give them a spot to grow on the fence like they were supposed to do. So we'll see how it works out. But I'm hoping to give me a little peace this spring and not fill up the area with crap pecan and look ridiculous. All right, what we got next? Our girl Amy, Cinnamon Girl 76. As far as I know, there's no podcast out there like this. Regardless, the Wrecking Yard podcast has always had a familiarity to it that has been itching at me for a comparison. Oscar Wilde did say comparisons are odious. For the most part, I agree. But in this episode, I finally scratched that itch of recognition. In a way, you are the Gen X Dan Connor. what you're presenting us in a way is in a way a 21st century touchstone of Roseanne. You have a one of us relatability. Your problems are our problems. As we commiserate on TRYP, we find that we are not alone in this life's common and contemporary struggles. And that special ingredient, just as in Roseanne, is you tackle subjects most shy away from, and you practice acceptance of folks that don't always fit in the norm of society. You do it like a humble artisan with grace and without agenda. I'm a day oneer that is in so many respects completely different and the same as you. I still shake my head in wonderment that I get to connect with the sage of a Texan in his garage every week and glean meaning from every episode. As always, many thanks, JW. Well, that is certainly high praise, Amy. I am a huge fan of Dan Connor, and I've probably mentioned that a time or two. Huge fan of John Goodman. Just listened to a great interview with him a week or so ago. I think Roseanne was early on one of the best sitcoms ever written. And because of what you said, because it related to people. Everybody didn't have the fancy, clean, sterile life that was represented on other sitcoms. And that was the first sitcom that showed a family not only fussing with each other playfully, but fussing with each other when they were irritated with each other. And a family that didn't have it all together and was struggling to make ends meet and live paycheck to paycheck, like I suspect most of us do. There's a few of us, I'm sure, that have got it all figured out. But I struggle alongside you guys. I had a financial hit before Christmas that I was trying to figure out how I was going to pull it off, okay? It was things are tight right now, and that's okay. There's money coming. I ain't worried about it, but, well, I'm always worried about it, but I appreciate that. That's what I tried to present, if nothing else, humility. I was talking to another person who's been writing something that I've been going back and forth with a while back, and he was talking how important humility is in the author community and how not enough of them practice it. And, you know, I do these Faulkner and these, I do all this sort of stuff. And people go, oh, you're brilliant. Oh, you're absolutely brilliant. You're genius. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not. What I'm good at is channeling and mimicking these brilliant men who laid the framework that is so well laid out that even a peon like me can understand it. That's what I'm good at. I'm good at understanding frameworks and understanding how to sound like other people. My book does not read like Faulkner. My book does not read like Cormac McCarthy. My book does not read like Ernest Hemingway. I will say there's been a lot of comparisons made to Mark Twain, but I think it's just our sort of sense of presentation. Is more about it. In a way, I have a similar writing style to Mark Twain. Read a lot of Mark Twain growing up, though. You know what I mean? Everybody learns from somebody. That's what John Goodman made me laugh in that interview. He was talking about somebody's like, oh, this thing you did this. He's like, oh, I stole that from Al Pacino. I saw Al Pacino do that in Heat, and I was like, oh, I got to try that. He's like, oh, I steal from everybody. Marlon Brando, everybody. I'm trying to learn how to do this thing. I was trying to learn how to be an actor. And that's the way I feel about writing is if you listen to my little short story just now, you didn't pick up on the James Lee Burke and that. You're just not a James Lee Burke reader, but he's probably my biggest influence. And James Lee Burke is like, his Dave Robichaud novels are like if Mark Twain and Faulkner teamed up to write detective novels in South Louisiana, right? His prose and poetry and the way he describes scene is so beautiful, and it stuck with me all my life since I started reading him in the early 90s, or no, maybe late 90s, and I've been hooked on him ever since. And I'm even one of those people, like, I go back and read his stuff before he's commercially successful because I just love the way the man writes, even when he was learning how to write. His first novel, that's not his first one. His last standalone novel before he started the Dave Robichaud series that made him commercially successful was called The Lost Get Back Boogie. I love that book. Absolutely love that book. only one I haven't read, he wrote one in 1971. It's real hard to get your hands on. I think it's called Swans in Mourning. I can't, don't quote me on that. That book's real hard to get your, it's a novel James Lee Burke wrote in like 1971. It didn't do well, and it's real hard to get your hands on that novel, and I've never found a copy of it. But I hope one day to find a copy of it and read it. I could probably get it on my, I don't like reading books on my phone. Okay. I like to hold a book. I like to hold a book and read it. And that's how I judge a book. All right. If I start reading your book and I get to the point where I can't put it down, I got to hold up somewhere and finish reading it. And that's a good book. That's a good book. So, I really don't like Cormac McCarthy. I know everybody else does. He's too bleak for me. But my editor, my buddy Adam, keeps telling me, you got to try some different stuff of his. Read some other stuff of his. So I'm going to go back to the beginning with Cormac. I read Sutterly once, but I learned some stuff about Sutterly recently. That was his alcoholic novel while he was going through some shit. And I want to go back and try to reread Sutterly and see if I don't find a little more out of it this time. I'm at a different stage. I read a lot of Cormac stuff when I was young. And, I'm not the same guy now. I have a different set of sensibilities and a different set of things. I read The Road. I read The Road when... I think we were pregnant with Junie, pregnant with my oldest kid. I think that's why I read. And that's a bad time to read a book like that. Okay. That's a bad time. It really left a bad taste in my mouth. But the movie was coming out, and I kind of wanted to see, I wanted to know what. Anyways, it was a bad time to read that book. I got off topic again. Amy, thank you for the high praise. I appreciate it. That makes me feel good. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to just, I like having this community, you guys, that, look, when I put my little short videos out on the internet and they get 600, 700 comments, and I engage with them and and that kind of stuff, but by and large, that stuff doesn't mean anything to me like y'all's comments do on the Wrecking Yard, like us talking in the chat, or even when it's a quiet week. So, some weeks it's quiet in the chat and it's okay. It's just something about having that community and being there and having this shared experience. Even the people that listen to it later and then come over on YouTube to tell me something, or occasionally I get an email through my manager, that tell me a little something. That's the stuff that means more to me than 1,000 comments on a short video I do, short content I do. That's the stuff that really gets to me. It makes me appreciate and want to continue doing this thing. All right, that's enough sappiness out of me. Let's wrap this thing up and get on with our Sunday. How about that? I gotta go in there and edit this dad blasted thing. And then I think I'm gonna try to sneak out of the, not sneak out of the house. That's a weird way to say it, but I think I'm gonna cruise over to the Punchline Comedy Club tonight. My buddy Trey is headlining. I'd like to go see a little bit of Trey. The closed sermon day, I kept thinking about that. Don't seek revenge. Rotten fruit will follow its own. Now, I didn't read this on a sign. I didn't hear it from a preacher. Didn't see it stitched on a pillow somewhere. It's just something I finally figured out after burning enough years to pay tuition. Justice that requires your participation ain't justice. It's just another job that don't pay. And I know that because I worked that job for a long time. I had a man older than me, supposed to be wiser, took money from me, cornered me, and then spent years keeping me nervous. Threats, posturing, that low, constant alert level. It tells you, you better watch out. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't walk away clean from that experience. I studied him. I ran scenarios in my head. I built plans so detailed they could have passed just about any inspection. In my mind, I was waiting on justice. I was going to get him. But what I was really doing was clocking in every day. Yeah, that's what I was really doing was clocking in every day to a job that didn't pay me a dime. Revenge is real seductive like that. It feels like progress. It feels like you're doing something useful with your anger, coming up with these plans to get somebody back, do something about it. But all it really does is turn your life into a holding pattern until somebody else gets what you think they deserve. And here's the truth that finally shook loose for me. Justice doesn't need your labor. Time is undefeated. Entropy is relentless. And people who refuse to change eventually get crushed by the weight of who they are. I didn't act. Didn't touch them. Never got them. Didn't get even. And the world handled it. His business collapsed. His family fell apart. He outlived what mattered most to him. And none of that required my fingerprints or intervention. What did require my effort was quitting the job. Letting go of the idea that my life had to stay paused until his finally fell apart. That's the real cost of revenge and revenge mindset. Not what it does to them, but how long it convinces you to wait on your own life because you're thinking about them. So if you're walking around right now carrying a plan, speech, some quiet little movie in your head you're hoping is going to play out where you finally win against some foe, ask yourself this. Honestly, honestly, look in the mirror and ask yourself, how much of your life are you willing to trade for a job that don't pay? Because I can tell you from experience, the day you quit working on that and thinking about revenge is the day your life starts paying you back. I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you to escape the trivialities that muck us up. I'm rooting for you to escape the mistakes I made, or at least dig out of them a little faster. Waste less energy on them. There's room at the table for all of us. I'm rooting for you guys. I'm JW. I love you. Happy New Year. Ooh, that is some good coffee right there. Episode 1, Diwali Bottoms. I feel good about that. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Love the mop, but it's the season of the sticks. And I saw your mom, she forgot that I existed. Half my fault, I just like to play the victim. I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas, and I dream each night of some version of you that I might not have, did not lose. I'm split in half, and that'll have to do. All right.